Hi, this is Heaton Shaw.
And this is Steli Efti.
And today on the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about what, Steli?
We're going to talk about startup advisors.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best.
So quick shout out to Tatiana Mitkova. I'm not sure if I butchered the name. She's a founder and a Startup Chat listener from Berlin. And she sent Heaton and I an email the other day, and she had some really great suggestions on topics. By the way, please keep do the suggestions and the feedback coming if you want to be critical, especially, but also if you want to praise us. We like to hear from you in any shape, form, or fashion. So she sent us a few points of feedback, and then she had a few things that she wanted us to discuss on the podcast. And the topic that we picked up on based on her suggestion is the topic of startup advisors. So here's the question that she has, and then we're going to just jump right into it. So Tatiana asked, do you have personal experience with an advisory board to your startups? How do you decide which person and with what particular experience will have the most added value and will really take the time to guide you as a founder? What do you think about turning a mentor into a formal member of the advisory board? Any advice on this topic would be highly appreciated. All right, so let's talk about advisory boards for startups. Heaton, first question, do you have experience in putting together like formal advisory boards or having advisors to your startups that had some kind of compensation in equity or in money?
Yeah, I've always done equity. I don't think I've ever done money as an advisor. I've done money as like, you know, contractor and stuff, but sometimes it's, you know, they can turn into both, like similar to how lawyers, you pay them and they'll also invest in your company and stuff. So there are some people that you might want as advisors, even though you paid them as a services. I've never really done that personally, but I have set up advisory boards, probably have at least a dozen advisors over at Kissmetrics, and I help set that up. I'll just jump right in and go into like kind of what we did there and why. So at Kissmetrics, this was an analytics company. This was around 2008, 9, and 10 is when all these advisory roles, we brought them on. And for us, it was like a time when a lot of people were talking about analytics and metrics and startups and how they should be measuring things. And there weren't that many people, you know, talking about it, but most of the folks that were talking about it were either people I really got to know really well, or they also became advisors to the company. And the reason that I did that is their expertise, their knowledge was a little cutting edge, if not very cutting edge at the time. And bringing them on helped us think through our product and shape a bunch of things about it. We were also able to do a lot of co-branding and other things with them sometimes. So this would be like folks like Eric Reese with the Lean Startup. We helped make some diagrams and some presentations with him. We didn't charge him for anything. He was just an advisor, so it was something that we kind of did because we really liked his work. So we made some pamphlets. We made a big poster for the Lean Startup, and I would say that was an example of somebody who there's both public and private sort of advisory things that he's done for us that have been tremendous. And we never exchanged money except when we were buying something from him, like a ticket to his conferences or, you know, a workshop or something. There's another guy, Sean Ellis. We had brought him on, he was brought on because he was talking a lot about like the qualitative stuff and product market fit. Those are all things we were very interested in. We were educating people about them on our blog and things like that. So it was really great to bring him on. He also helped teach us a lot of things internally. And he's also someone else we did a whole bunch of external stuff with. And, you know, me personally and some of the folks on the team, we still do a bunch of stuff with him just because he bought one of our products, et cetera. And I'll give an example of the third one, which is a little bit different. There's a friend of mine. She was head of engineering, I believe, at SEO Moz, and then has worked at a bunch of other places, Amazon before that. Her name's Kate, and she's up in Seattle, and she's an engineer. And she was one of the few engineers that were able to kind of talk to me, talk to the engineering team, and really give us a lot of great advice on engineering management and org structure and things like that. She's really brilliant with that stuff and more. So brought her on, and it was just a bunch of sessions here and there, and we'd always just call her when we had a really hard problem because she was very good with those when it came to engineering. and people and stuff like that in general, actually. So those are kind of three examples. There's many more. In our specific case, we did it out of expertise. And then we also expertise either way, whether it's in the industry because there's a trend, or like Kate, where it was just deep expertise in a certain topic or category.
So all this sounds super positive, right? So it sounds like it was both valuable. It was definitely valuable for you guys internally. You were happy and glad to have these people as formal advisors. I assume that it was also valuable to them. So this kind of worked out. What do you think made it a successful relationship? And in hindsight, would you have done anything different? Or do you have examples where it didn't work out? Maybe not naming them by name, but maybe pointing out to why some of these advisors were really valuable versus others where you made a mistake or where it didn't quite work out as well, kind of things for other people to learn from.
Sure. So advisory shares usually vest over 2 years, at least that's standard sort of Bay Area and general startup land.
Yep.
So you do have a lot of opportunity if you wanted to deposit, stop it, things like that. So I do want to mention that. I've rarely had to do that. Done it maybe once when I've been an advisor, maybe twice, actually, if I really think about it, over the last like 7 or 8 years. And that was just when usually we both realize I'm not being that useful, you know, or something like that. So I would even go into the relationship like that and say, hey, look, if we're utilizing you and your talents or whatever, great. You know, and if we do it for a year and there's another year vesting, we're probably not going to care. You know, it's cool. We'll let it vest out. But if it's like under a year, we might just like decide to just do it for a year instead of two. I hope you're cool with that, right? Everyone's going to be cool with that if they really want to add value to your business. If it's a more serious relationship, sometimes the advisor doesn't want to do that. But I mean, on a very high level, like once you give somebody shares, just think of them as giving away, you know? I'm maybe really super chill about it or not, but I don't make people do things in writing. I do spend enough time with them beforehand to make sure that they can actually help in the ways that I'm thinking. Sometimes I'll even have a team member talk to them just to make sure. Most people are cool with all that. But at the same time, like, you don't want to waste time getting all these advisors. You know, they're not going to really do much for your business beyond give you some advice here and there. Some can more, you know, help you like more than a few degrees, but don't look for like a silver bullet or like a game changer in any specific person. You know, it's still a relationship. It's still something where they might add value, you know, they might not. The worst I've seen, just to give you a bad example or a negative example, is like there was a company I'm involved in and they have an advisor, and that advisor emailed them about something they were doing and was just very negative about it, you know, and not just not, you know, kind of like, I don't want to say inappropriate, but he just shared his opinion in a very strong way in an email. And the founders right away, I'm an advisor as well, they're emailing me saying, hey, what happened? Like, why would he do something like this? You know, I'm like, hey, you know, he's got his opinion. y'all did that. And that is fact. And he didn't like it. And just to tell you the truth, like, I don't care what you do. You have a certain way of running your company, like respect, you know, but like, would I have done what you did? No. Do I do that? No. Do I really care whether you do it? Hell no. You know, he really cared. He really, really cared. And these founders are just poor founders. They're just like, what do I do? What do I do? You know, and it's like a pretty famous person, more famous than me. And, you know, he's sitting there like, you know, kind of being super critical. They're like, oh, should we just like take back his shares and get mad at him? I'm like, you know, he's just sharing his opinion. And if he's doing it in a way that hurts you guys, that's a shame. You know, he's an advisor. I'm sure he helped you at some point. So just brush it off, move on, you know? And they did, but like, it was hard because, you know, and if it happened to me, it'd be hard too. It'd be like, they're attacking something. They're attacking my company, my culture. Like, what? And they're an advisor. Oh my God. So that's probably one of the worst ones I've heard, where it's just like, ah, no. But yeah, outside of that, like, I mean, there's obviously the other bad stuff. Like, you could give away too much, or you could, you know, and find people or people could not be valuable or something like that. But again, if you take the approach of like, I want more people involved in my company, great, you know, and these people can help me. There's nothing wrong with it. Again, though, I have to stress, like, this is not about going and getting a whole bunch of advisors just because you want to be cool or anything like that. Yeah, there's one other strategy, and then I'm going to stop. Stellian, you probably got lots of thoughts. One other strategy I've seen is basically get a bunch of influencers, have them be advisors, and have them sort of help pimp out your company, so to speak. That's cool. I've seen that work too. So that's another example of things that work. It's sometimes very strategic in a market. Sometimes some consumer businesses might do it. Sometimes it's more of a form of a partnership. So I've seen that too.
What do you mean by pimp out? Do you mean like they just heavily promote it?
Yeah, they promote it because, you know, a startup doesn't necessarily have money to pay them, right?
Yep.
They have equity, and they might even not be regular celebrities. It might be tech people, or it might be a specific niche, you know?
Yeah. I mean, this brings up a good point, and I'll share some of my experience and kind of the pros and cons that I see. But this is actually one of the better ways, I think, to use an advisor is when it's somebody that both can give you advice. Like, I like the way that you were describing the people that you chose at Kissmetrics to be advisors. Yeah. We're not just people, or most of them that you described, we're not just people that were helpful to you guys in building your product and understanding analytics better, kind of internally advising you on things, but they were also thought leaders and influencers to your potential customer base, to the customers that, to the people that you wanted to sell software to.
Absolutely.
So that is, you know, obviously twice as good as just somebody that can give you advice about a particular thing, but doesn't really bring any influence in the market that you want to, you know, grow in. So if you have, if your advisors have a large following and that following is your ideal customer, that's always, you know, that's always a big win. So that can make a lot of sense. But you need to be careful about that because sometimes people have massive followings, but that following is not your ideal customer, right? And people don't – I find that too many founders are not very mindful and thoughtful about this. They just go, oh, shit, if so-and-so tweets about us, he has or she has 10 million followers. That could change everything. I'll tell you a quick story on this. This was – I don't know if I should name the name. Let me not name the name, but famous Hollywood actor that also invests in lots of startups. There's a handful. You pick and choose who you think this is. That in a prior startup was, you know, we had met him a few times. He was super cool to us and actually really helpful and sat down and brainstormed with us and all that. And he tweeted out, you know, a link to our product a few times and generated hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of uniques in just a few minutes, which was awesome. And zero signups or conversions because we had a service where you had to sign up with your credit card and his main following were, you know, young teenage girls without credit cards probably. So, right. So just because somebody has a massive following doesn't mean that following is your ideal audience. So if it isn't, it doesn't matter if it brings you millions of viewers or whatever or hundreds of thousands of clicks in a few minutes. It's not going to convert. So make sure that you have people that truly speak to your ideal customer.
But, great advice.
Yes. And in that case, it was actually not that bad for us because he was not a formal advisor, thought about investing and didn't end up investing. So the tweeting was just because he believed or wanted to support us, not that we paid for it or anything. But my personal experience when it comes to advisory boards is that I had one startup that heavily relied on an advisory board in the sense that I'd build out a fairly large one, say about maybe 10 people on the advisory board. And today, with the company that I'm running today, CloseEye, we have no formal advisors. And personally, I am an advisor with shares in a few startups, but I also have said no to being an advisor to many, many, many more. And I have a certain philosophy behind this. So with my first startup in the Valley, we were trying to do something big in the education space. I started that company in 2007, and we had a number of just industry experts in the education space, people that were, you know, heading the internal or external education in large kind of Silicon Valley companies like Google and SAP, and just people with a lot of experience in the education space, either academically or in the corporate world, that I'd build an advisory board. And mainly, my main goal was to add credibility to our company, was to add some expertise in, you know, people that have been working their entire life in education, and also, you know, to have people that would open doors for us. And to a certain degree, that all worked. But also, I think, learned that, and I think this is something that a lot of young or inexperienced founders do, that you can easily overestimate the value that you expect from an advisor. And so that's why I love the way you've been talking about these advisors. You're like, you know what? You give them some equity. Yeah, investing over 2 years, but you know, they're gonna help as much as they can, but don't expect too much. Don't go nuts. Like, these people, whenever you need them, send them an email. They might be helpful, they might be not, and that's fine, right? So your expectations are fairly casual. And I think that most founders, they have overblown expectations on this advisor is the blah, 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 is so famous, New York Times bestselling author, is the CEO of this big startup, and hence this person is going to make everything happen for me, or this person is really going to make a massive difference. And maybe, but more likely not. More likely they're going to be useful and helpful when they can, but they're not going to make or break your business. They're not going to make your company successful or not successful. They're not going to invest a huge amount of time with you. So just be careful to have realistic expectations when it comes to advisors. I think that advisors can give you credibility. They can open doors in an ideal way. They can help you with true expertise. But also, startups are pivoting. Startups are changing what they're doing. So you have to be mindful that you might be in the analytics or in the educational space, and tomorrow you're an online gaming company, right? And then what do you do with these 15 educational world experts, right? They provide zero value at that point for you.
That's exactly right.
It might be fine to have like one or two people with deep expertise in the area that you're in, but if you're not post-product market fit, if you're not already scaled to thousands of people and really like rock and rolling, and you're really sure this is going to be the thing that you're going to be doing over the next few years, then you don't want to build a 20-person deep expertise advisory board that's going to be useless, you know, maybe in 6 months once you completely change what you're doing. You know, today, so that was the experience then. It was somewhat helpful, but my expectations were not fine, and I was sometimes really troubled, or I had resentment with some of my advisors because I didn't think they really helped as much as I thought they should. In hindsight, I just think I had bad expectations. Today, with Close.io, we don't have a formal advisory board. Today, I have the benefit that I have a few friends and people that I view as advisors, but that there's no need right now to offer up equity because the way this works is very mutual. I look at you as an advisor, basically, to myself, a very good friend, but also if there's trouble in our business or something going on, I'll always chat with you and get your input.
Likewise.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's great. And we have kind of a very regular relationship here because we have this podcast together. There's some other founders that maybe once every 2 months, I have a call on the calendar. We'll talk for sometimes just 10 minutes. And it's just going to be like, what's up in your life? Is there something I can do? Yeah, this sucks right now. Oh, why don't you try this? Or I really need help with that. Oh, I can't help you there, but I know somebody. Let me shoot an email. There's just a few people like that that I see as advisors and people that I lean on when I'm struggling. But there's no need right now. It doesn't seem to be a need to offer somebody equity in the business because the relationships are fairly casual and mutual at this point.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then when it comes to being an advisor, I've done this with a few startups where I had a very close personal relationship with the founders and had helped them before significantly. So there were people I knew I would want to work with and help a lot. And they offered me equity, and it kind of made sense for what they were doing. But today, and I've written a blog post about this, today I have fairly regularly people reach out to me that want me on their advisory board and then offer me equity. And my response is always, hey, why don't we date for a little bit before you give me ownership in your business, right? Even if it's small ownership. We just got to know each other. Why don't you stay in touch with me, keep me updated with your progress, and every time you need help, just shoot me an email and ask me what you need. And I'll try to be as useful and as helpful as I can. And if over time it seems like I'm really useful and really helpful and you want to still give me equity, let's figure it out in the future. But I don't really want to sign a contract. I don't really want to get equity in a business where we've known each other for like, you know, a week and you've sent me two emails. Like, why don't we just get to know each other better? And if you then still think like you want to give me equity, cool. And in many cases, what turns out is these businesses don't go anywhere, or the founders change their mind about things, or I'm not really that useful to them. So it would have been a total waste of time for both them and me to be sending contracts back and forth and signing them and having to figure out the tax implications of all that and all that. So this figures itself out a lot of times. But I'm a big fan of just getting to know somebody a little bit better before instantly offering somebody equity. And I don't want equity for everybody that offers it to me because I don't think it's the right thing to do. I don't know. So that's kind of been my own personal way of dealing with who am I taking advisory shares in versus where do I suggest to maybe wait a little bit?
Cool. Yeah. I should probably tell my story on that one real quick.
Yeah.
I've done about 80 investment or advisory roles. I don't know how many are exactly active right now, unfortunately. And one of the reasons is I've sort of evolved the way I thought about it. I can be pretty helpful to a company pretty fast and be continuously helpful. And a lot of founders kind of know why and how now. I get a lot of intros. I probably see 2 to 3 dozen startups a week, maybe more sometimes, whether it's their decks or meeting with them or whatever. So I probably have a lot more different cadence and experience than most people. For me, though, like at this point, like I'm super helpful to as many people as I can be, where I used to take like 1,000 shares here or like, you know, a 0.1% of a company or something like that, just because people offered it. And I did have all the things you said, like, was super helpful to them, made a relationship and they offered it and I wouldn't say no. Now these days, those kind of things I say no to. But what happens to me is the founder, some founders and I will gravitate towards, okay, you can do this for me. I see how you're doing this right now. And, you know, I'd like to consider having you as an advisor. So for me, it's like the next level of that I'll do. And I'm doing a lot less of them, but I always have about 12 that are a little heavier where I'm just helping out a lot. Sometimes I'm going to a meeting a week with them. For me personally, I enjoy it. And the way the companies I have currently run, there's no venture funding in any of them. And we're just getting started in one of them. And the other one's like 11 years old. Yeah. So I tend to just help out a lot like that. But all the rules you said or the ways you thought about it, Steli, they're exactly pretty much how I do it, except higher volume and looking for way more leverageable stuff. So, you know, as I said before, most advisors can't move more than a degree or two just because, you know, unless it's like an expertise-based thing or something, it's kind of rare. I tend to try to find the rare situations where I can help tremendously. That's been a lot of fun. Outside of that, though, like what, you know, throwing these shares around, I think founders kind of do it maybe too loosely without getting to know people. At the same time, they do get excited and oftentimes they just want association. And I think we haven't really talked about that, Steli, but we might have talked about it before. But that idea of like just being associated with so-and-so and all that, I used to sort of probably perpetuate that a little bit like 3-4 years ago. And now I've sort of slowed that down just by being out there more and being an official advisor. So now I actually tend to say no about 90-95% of the time.
Yeah. So let's end the episode with a tip.
Yeah,
I think we packed a lot in here already. I think that my tip here is not going to be surprising. Is ask yourself, why do I want to build an advisory board right now? What will be the function? What's the expectation? What is the imagined value? Can I ask somebody who's done this successful before how they do it? Can I just learn from somebody else's experience? And then make sure that you communicate with those advisors what your expectations are and that you, both them and you, have the right expectations and ideally that you've known each other for a while. And if you can, check companies out that have them already on the advisory board and just reach out to those founders and see if they were really, really helpful or if there's an ideal way to get the most value out of the relationship and give value back. So I think just being realistic, being mindful and purposeful when putting these advisory boards together is my number one tip to end the episode on.
Cool. My tip would be if you're going to have more than like 2 or 3 advisors, some companies do, most don't. If you're going to do that and really have an advisory board, actually set a program, make everybody meet every quarter, or get on a call, make it productive, give them an update, ask a specific question. I've seen some folks do that. It's actually worked out really well. It's really applicable once you get past 2 or 3 and you want to sort of corral people to helping you out. Like, you know, for example, when you had your startup and you had, you know, a whole bunch of education and advisors, it might've been great to like do something like this just to keep everything structured. And you might've felt less anxiety around having these advisors, although you probably just took it too seriously. So yeah, make sure you organize it and structure it and get everyone involved if you're really going to have more than a few and take it that seriously.
Awesome. That's a great tip. That's it from us.